put an end to it.
Former Trump campaign aide Rick Gates pled guilty today to conspiracy and false statement charges brought up by special counsel Robert Mueller's office. The White House has distanced itself from this investigation, saying it has nothing to do with President Trump. This is USA Radio News.
Hello, I'd like to deposit this to checking.
Fate is a fickle master.
What?
The future is uncertain.
Okay, and what's my account balance?
The horizon is cloudy. I see a long, treacherous voyage filled with great peril.
Look, can I just get a deposit slip or something?
A fortune bank teller. Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to GEICO.
I see a yellow-eyed serpent.
What?
And a low APR.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Howdy, folks. Colonel Sanders here to tell you about KFC's $10 chicken shares. They're perfect to share with those special people in your life. Choose from 6 pieces of my Kentucky Fried Chicken, 9 extra crispy tenders, 12 hot wings, or a bunch of popcorn nuggets. So grab your buddy, your cousin, your dad, your college roommate, or my friend Joan, and head to KFC. Are you there yet? Okay, good. Now get to sharing and eating. KFC's $10 chicken shares. It's finger-licking good.
At participating KFC's only. Hot wings not available at all locations. Prices may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
There still seems to be this ongoing debate of how many immigrants should be allowed into the country and what skill set should they have. Well, gold and silver pawn owner Rick Harrison joined Fox Business to say, look, we can allow people in, but they need to be the high-skilled workers because certain jobs are going away.
You just can't look at, that's one of the things, problems with a lot of corporations. They just look at the next quarter and they don't look at the long haul. If we let a lot of people in, maybe short term it will help some people.
Yeah.
But in the long run, if we have a bunch of people coming to this country without a great education, it will be a drag on the country because we already know that 10 years from now, low-tech jobs are going to be replaced by robots. We need educated people coming in this country.
The Rasmussen Report's daily presidential tracking poll today shows that 50% of likely U.S. voters approve of President Trump's job performance. The disapproval rate is at 49%. For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
Allergy sufferers? The name's Nigel. I'm a well-educated owl, therefore well-versed in the difference between what's wise and unwise. Talking like a pirate on a job interview. Unwise. Using Zizol for 24-hour relief of your allergy symptoms? Quite wise. In a clinical study, 90% of allergy sufferers who use Zizol felt powerful 24-hour relief after just one day. So for continuous allergy relief, don't be unwise. Be wise all. Take Zizol. Use as directed.
The United States today unveiled what it's calling the largest North Korean sanctions to date as the Trump administration continues to seek ways to isolate the rogue nuclear state. The new sanctions are aimed at disrupting North Korean shipping and trading companies and vessels. The Treasury Administration said that they are determined through these efforts to increase the pressure on the North Korean regime and show Kim Jong-un that there's no new path for him but to denuclearize. Former Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, shares his thoughts on these new sanctions.
Well, I'm in favor of any new sanctions that we impose on North Korea. The real issue is whether there's time for them to have an effect. CIA Director Mike Pompeo said a few weeks ago that North Korea was within a handful of months, his phrase, handful of months, to being able to drop a thermonuclear weapon on any target they wanted to in the continental United States. You name specific ships that you're sanctioning. Unfortunately, those are not the only ships in the world. So how long it takes for this really to kick in and have an impact on what is a prison camp economy already is really very hard to say. I support it, but nobody should be under any illusions how close North Korea is after 25 years of trying to achieve that objective of deliverable nuclear weapons.
That audio courtesy of Fox Business, and Ivanka Trump is in South Korea to serve as the honorary leader of the U.S. delegation at the Olympic closing ceremony. This is USA Radio News.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Let's take a bit of a break from the tumult, shall we? We have a very interesting combination of segments for you this week. Handwriting, pets, Nazis, and babies. All this week on Now It's the News. Thank you so much for listening today. Let's start with handwriting. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. It doesn't play a hugely prominent role in my life at this point, but when I was in elementary school and middle school and even in high school, it certainly was there in a big way, handwriting. And my teachers would comment on it, and mine was terrible. I don't know about yours. But we're going to talk about the history of handwriting and its future. We're speaking with Anne Trubeck today. She's the author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting. Anne, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So how has handwriting evolved over the course of history? Like, how seriously has it been taken during different historical periods?
Well, for a long time in the West, it was the only way people had to write, right? Before the printing press was invented, that was the primary form of communication, was handwriting. Before then, there were many primarily oral cultures who had no writing at all and had very sophisticated, civilizations. Since the printing press and since the typewriter, it has sort of changed in its importance. So it really depends when in history you're talking about and where you're talking about. But certainly today, handwriting is not the primary way that people communicate through writing. And that's been true since about the typewriter was invented, I'd say. So for about the last 100 years, it sort of got demoted.
So our handwriting has probably become much messier since that time.
It certainly has become much messier for individuals since the internet, the computer. I mean, handwrite far, far less than I used to. I bet you do. I bet everyone listening just handwrites less. And the less you do it, the harder it gets to be. And so your skills atrophy, just like anything, when you do less of it.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. And we're speaking with Anne Trubeck. She's the author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting. I go back and I look at my dad, for example, does a lot of investigation into our background, into our ancestry, and you look at some of the documents, and it's just amazing how beautiful the documents are. I mean, they wrote copiously, and yet they wrote by and large, not universally, so neatly. I mean, they really focused a lot of time and attention into that, and I suppose all that mental energy now is going to texting and posting things on Facebook.
Right, exactly. I mean, there have been different scripts that people have been taught throughout the centuries. So the reason why, your grandparents' handwriting looks different is because they were taught a different script when they were in school. And they spent a huge amount of the school day on that script. So your ancestors really were put through the ringer in terms of the hours that were spent mastering and practicing how to make their G's and their M's and their E's. And less time is spent now doing that, and more time is spent on learning science and, right. Reading books. So it's a trade-off.
You know, let's get down to brass tacks here, because, our civilization seems, especially if you look at it historically, very, very vibrant. I have no reason to believe that the internet is going to go away tomorrow and that all of our computer infrastructure will dissolve overnight. But you wonder which is more durable. I mean, because it's contingent upon so many factors, what we've built up here. And are we getting to the point where if suddenly humanity needed to write and have good handwriting for, even if it was only a few years, say there were a horrific nuclear war or something like that, God forbid, and we needed to go back to handwriting, could we do it? I mean, it wouldn't be the biggest concern in the world, but, I mean, if you're talking about doctor's prescriptions or something like that, or essential communications, could we do it? Could we pull off good handwriting even for a couple of decades, given what we've taught ourselves to do now?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it will be really low on our list of concerns.
For sure, yeah.
In the future. I think food, might be more of an issue. And, paper is not the most durable surface. I mean, if there's a horrible explosion, there goes the paper.
Yes.
But yes, we could do it. Absolutely.
Okay. I am emboldened by your faith in humanity. I think that's fantastic. So what is the future of handwriting going to be? Because it seems like we need it less and less. The times that I see it, when there is a doctor's prescription and it seems to be indecipherable. Maybe that's always been the case, but more and more so each year. Like, what's going to happen to handwriting, and where are the circumstances where it's actually going to be used?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I mean, even the doctor's prescription, we often use that as an example. But when was the last time a doctor wrote a prescription? And my doctor puts it in the computer and prints it out.
Yeah.
Even that's already gone. Yes, we will use it less and less because we're choosing to, because there's good reasons to use it less and less. All of us could be handwriting a lot of things, but we're choosing to use a computer, for good reason. I think it will have a renaissance as an art form, and people will start appreciating and taking up calligraphy more and more. I think that we're going to see that, it is a beautiful thing to do if you become a master at it, and people become more interested in doing that, I do think. And I think that we will continue to, handwrite less as our, everyday communication, and ours are business and school communication, but it may flourish as an art form. That's just a theory. I mean, I'm not a futurist.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, no.
And it will take a very, very, very long time. I mean, in my book, I talk about how long it takes for change to happen. So, in there have been examples of, say, papyrus no longer being used and paper replacing it, but then they'll find papyrus scrolls like 500 years after paper had replaced it. People will still continue to handwrite and learn to handwrite for generations.
We're speaking with Anne Trubeck. She is the author of The History and Uncertain Future of Handwriting. One final question. I got to figure this out. The gender differentiation. Why is my wife's handwriting so much better than mine?
Well, first of all, in the 19th century, this is all cultural. This is not genetic. In the 19th century, women were taught a simpler hand because it was thought they couldn't master the complicated scripts that men did. Oh. And it was seen that women were worse at handwriting. Oh. But what I argue now is handwriting is primarily a fine motor skill, and girls develop fine motor skills younger. Huh. And we're taught handwriting at a younger age. And so, girls tend to be more proficient at it, and then they take pride in how good it is, and they get rewarded for that, and then it sort of continues that way. So I think it has to do with the fine motor skill aspect of it.
Interesting. Okay. And come to think of it, that may not apply to my daughter who's about to turn 18, but I can tell you. And maybe this is just me and my experience, but the young women I grew up with had the most beautiful handwriting, and I have I and all the males I know have had the most difficult to decipher handwriting, and now you've explained that to me. It's cultural. It's not genetic. So thank you for solving that mystery for me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
And all the teachers are men. Like, the best calligraphers in the world are men.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we've been speaking with Anne Trubeck. She is the author of The History and the Uncertain Future of Handwriting. Thank you for assuaging my nerves as to the status of handwriting during the next nuclear holocaust. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
All
great
the best.
Success.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
So, how are you enjoying this latest stock market roller coaster ride? You've worked too long and too hard to let market volatility and a tired old spend down strategy rob you of your retirement savings. David J. Scranton, host of the Income Generation television program, has dedicated his entire career to educating baby boomers how to avoid becoming prey to market volatility and the retirement spend down trap. To teach you how to get off the roller coaster and transform a potential retirement spend down into retirement income, David's now offering free copies of his latest book, Return on Principle, 7 Core Values to Help Protect Your Money in Good Times and Bad, to the first 1,000 boomers to respond to this message by calling 866-913-1234. Don't let market volatility ruin your retirement. Become part of the income generation. 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Call now for your free book.
This report is brought to you by the American Egg Board and the Egg Nutrition Center. February is American Heart Month, a perfect time to examine your dietary choices and determine if you are making the right decisions for your heart. You may not think of eggs as part of a heart-healthy diet, but this nutrient powerhouse is a perfect pair to whole grains, vegetables, and other heart-healthy foods. Decades of research have demonstrated that healthy adults can enjoy eggs without impacting their risk of heart disease. In fact, a recent study suggests eating one egg a day may reduce risk of stroke by 12%. Dr. Tia M. Raines, Executive Director at the Egg Nutrition Center.
Everyone loves the taste and convenience of eggs, and they should feel good about eating them too. One large egg has varying amounts of 13 essential vitamins and minerals and high-quality protein, all for 70 calories. And don't toss the yolk. It contains most of the egg's nutrients, including choline, which has been linked to brain health.
For more information on eggs and an overall heart-healthy diet, visit eggnutritioncenter.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you in business, not a member of the chamber? Come to the Hunterdon County Chamber Expo to see what it's all about and meet other business owners. Enjoy the restaurant showcase and enter to win the door prize just for business entries. The Chamber offers special benefits for new memberships during the Expo. So join us at Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington on Thursday, November 9th from 2 to 7 p.m. Don't miss it!
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Thank you.
And now, it's the news.
We're speaking with Dr. Brian Beal from Animal ER Season 2, premieres Saturday, August 26th at 10/9 Central on Nat Geo Wild. Brian Beal, tell us, how did you get into this business?
Well, you know, I hate to say it because I'll have to divulge my age, but I've been doing this for over 25 years now, and I'm more passionate about it now than I've ever been, and I just found the right job. And you know, it all started back when I was a kid. Like most kids, they want to be a veterinarian. And, you know, I had the experience of spending a lot of time with my grandparents who were huge animal lovers. And, you know, that was back when you didn't really think about this close bond between pets and their families. But I noticed that when their animals had a problem, they would, you know, go hours away to take them up to University of Pennsylvania to get that specialty care. And so that just influenced me, and I saw what could be done for animals, but you just had to go out and seek it to get that best care possible. That's not the case anymore. You know, that's available all over the place now.
We all love our pets, but it seems like these days there's a degree to which people will take that transcends what we had before. I mean, I hear stories about dog antidepressants and people just going the extra mile for their pets. How far is too far, do you think, when it comes to a pet?
Well, you know, really, that's a very personal question. And what we try to do at Gulf Coast Veterinary Specialists and Compassion First Pet Hospitals, which we're part of, which is a huge expanding group of state-of-the-art hospitals across the country, is we try to help people look at their animal and kind of give them advice about the quality of life of their patient. We want them to know, you know, what can be done, but we're not going to recommend something that, you know, to do unless we think it's going to lead to a good quality of life. So we try to counsel them and make sure that they're making a good decision, and make sure they go in with their eyes wide open.
We're speaking with Dr. Brian Beal. He is on Animal ER Season 2, premieres Saturday, August 26th at 10/9 Central on Nat Geo Wild. You got a bit of weather coming into your neck of the woods right now. I guess Tropical Storm Harvey is headed probably south of you. And hopefully it'll have passed, and there won't be too much going on in your neck of the woods by the time that this goes to air. But whenever there's a disaster, whenever there's a lot of weather, a lot of pets get hit the hardest. What have you seen with regard to that, and how do you approach it at your animal hospital?
Well, Gulf Coast Veterinary Specialists, we are in Houston, and of course that's a target for many of these tropical storms and hurricanes that come through, and we are experienced in that, let me tell you. So we've been hit hard three times, and we've actually had flooding that we had to deal with, and you know, we are ready for it. We have crews, a large crew that's on call. The minute we get hit, the cleanup takes about 24 hours. We're typically, if we flood, which we've flooded three times, we're back and going within about 24 hours. We've not only had flooding, we actually had a fire recently, and it was funny because when we were filming Animal ER with Nat Geo Wild, they actually were there during the fire, and we had to evacuate over 200 personnel and over 100 animals, and some of those were in surgery. Up out of the hospital, and it took about 10 minutes to get everybody out there. So we're well-versed and ready to go for any type of disaster.
What tend to be the needs of pets in a situation like that? How do people come to you, and what issues come up around something like that?
Well, you know, in the case of a hurricane, you know, many, not only do we experience it, all the veterinarians around the area are going to experience it. And we're just fortunate to have, you know, the ability to have this huge team in place to get us up and running quickly. The problem we face, though, is that now all the other hospitals don't have the ability to do that. And so we get deluged with a huge number of patients afterwards. So we're working overtime and working really hard, and we're bringing in people you know, that are off that day to come in and just deal with all these patients that need care on an emergency basis.
Mostly it's backlog more than anything else, really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So our caseload goes up because there's just a lot of the things that would routinely be handled by the regular veterinarian. Now they have to seek additional help. Usually we're doing specialty care. So the pets will go to a veterinarian. They need advanced care or some technique that only a specialist will do. And so they'll send those cases. Now we're getting the routine problems just because they don't have anywhere else to go.
Got it. We're speaking with Dr. Brian Beal with Animal ER. I want to bring up something that we're concerned about with our dog, Fred, just as a general thing. It hasn't happened to him yet or anything. But, you know, we have these little weeds called foxtails in our backyard. My wife is very scrupulous about cropping them down because she's worried. She's heard stories and experienced had dogs have those get up into their nose and do a lot of damage. How much of a concern is that, and what should we do to prevent it?
Oh, you know, foxtails are horrible. You know, they're one of these things. It's like a fish hook that goes up the nose and just migrates its way up. And, you know, they're very difficult to pull out because they have these barbs on them. And, you know, they're very irritating. They can get stuck in the tissues in very difficult places to access. So a lot of times it's difficult to diagnose it. We'll use special things like small, tiny little scopes that can go up into the nose, and it magnifies everything greatly so we can see them. And, you know, your wife's doing a good thing trying to prevent it by keeping it from producing the actual part that causes the problem.
Tell us what we can expect from season two of Animal ER.
You know, Animal ERs, you never know what to expect. That's the fun part about it. And, you know, there's a lot of animal shows out there, a lot of veterinary shows out there, but this one is definitely unique and different from all of them. I think the neatest thing about it is, you know, you're seeing state-of-the-art care for these animals, just cutting-edge technology. You're seeing animals that have big problems that, you know, ordinarily a lot of times they get put to sleep, but we're able to save most of these animals and give them a very good quality of life. And you'll see a great variety of species. Of course, you'll see lots of dogs and cats. That's what most of us have at home. But there's a lot of people who have rabbits and snakes and birds and pocket pets like this that you'll also get to see, as well as a lot of zoo animals. So we've treated tigers right in the middle of Houston, elephants, two-toed sloth, penguins, pythons, anteaters. So just about everything. You never know what you're going to see on Animal ER.
Now we'll look for more, some of the more exotic ones. That sounds fascinating. Dr. Brian Beal from Animal ER Season 2 launches Saturday, August 26th at 10/9 Central on Nat Geo Wild. Episodes after that air Saturday, every Saturday, 10/9 Central. Dr. Brian Beal, thank you for what you do, and thank you for being on Now It's the News.
Well, thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about Animal ER. It's a great show. I think it's a great family show that people will enjoy.
I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
Want an easy way to brighten up your day? Get beautiful new window fashions from the number one provider of custom window coverings in North America, Budget Blinds. It's easy because Budget Blinds does it all for you with style and service for every budget. We're your neighborhood experts, and we bring the showroom right to your home, then expertly measure, install, and back it up with the best warranty in the business. Right now, we make it easier than ever with savings up to $500 on select window coverings. There's a reason why Budget Blinds is the number one provider of custom window coverings in North America. See for yourself. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS now for a free consultation right at home. Call and get savings up to $500, 855-BUDGET-BLINDS, or go online to budgetblinds.com. Brighten up your day the easy way. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS now. Offer good on select products at participating independently owned and operated franchises only. Ask for details.
USA Radio News.
Today, President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump welcome Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and Mrs. Turnbull of Australia to the White House. This was President Donald Trump's first news conference since the school shooting last week in Parkland, Florida. The president once again addressed the shooting.
I spoke with Paul Ryan this morning, with Mitch McConnell, and people are looking to really energize. I know that you've had, this has been going on for a long time, many, many years. And you've had people in my position, and they would mention things, but not a lot of things got done, obviously. We take it very seriously. We want to put an end to it.
Former Trump campaign aide Rick Gates pled guilty today to conspiracy and false statement charges brought up by special counsel Robert Mueller's office. The White House has distanced itself from this investigation, saying it has nothing to do with President Trump. This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
And now, it's the news.
Here's a lesson. If you've got a cushy job, keep your mouth shut about it. The New York State court system's longtime communications chief was fired this week after inadvertently telling a reporter that he barely went to work at his $166,000 a year job. David Brookstaver's firing came a day after the New York Post reported he unwittingly dialed a reporter's voicemail, which captured him conversing with someone else and acknowledging that he was slacking off at the office. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Andrew Gross is the author of The Saboteur. It tells the story of how a few Norwegian resistance fighters stopped Nazi Germany's development of the atom bomb. Andrew Gross, welcome to Now It's the News. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Derek. Nice to be here.
So I've learned something over the course of the years about the resistance movement to Hitler in Norway. Tell us how much your story here mirrors the reality of what happened.
Well, first of all, I'm a novelist, and I'm a suspense novelist. And I guess just to, I came across this story, in my research for my previous book, The One Man, which is also a World War II novel with a bit of a Holocaust component to it. But the thing that tied them together, the two books, was, a theme of, allies preventing the Nazis from acquiring the decisive weapon of the war, their own atomic bomb. And I came across this story of valor and just uncommon bravery and such a consequential raid in my research on The One Man. Now, I have built a fictional hero up, although based on a real participant. But what I thought was that given the extraordinary bravery that this small group of commandos and saboteurs undertook, that all of the military aspects of this book, the raids, there were two of them in basically, that I would stay 100% as close to the history and the truth as I could.
Interesting. So this is pretty much, as far as you know, mirrors what actually happened, but the events themselves are dramatized and the characters.
I mean, if your listeners like sort of old fashioned sweeping World War II stirring novels like The Guns of Navarone or Were Eagles There. This is very much in that sort of vein, action-adventure with, I guess the other thing I do, at least, is I'm not a military writer. What I am is a suspense writer who likes to take people who need to make a moral choice and put them in really trying and exigent situations. And in this book, if I may, Kurt Nordstrom, who's my hero in it, is a courageous Norwegian resistance fighter who has lost everything in the war. His fiance has been killed. His regiment has been dispersed. His country has been overrun. Who has to make a choice between his heart and duty when it falls on him ultimately to single-handedly stand in the way of the Nazis from acquiring the decisive weapon of the war. And it's possible that some of your readers are familiar with the attempts of the Allies to destroy the Nazis from building up heavy water, which is a substance vital to the building of an atomic bomb, at this remote plant in Vemork, Norway, 600 feet above this completely unscalable gorge where only a handful of trained men could even attempt such an improbable mission. Between the brutality of the weather, the inhospitable terrain, and the overwhelming military numbers against them.
It's fascinating. We're speaking with Andrew Gross. He is the author of The Saboteur. He is an author of thriller novels, both with himself and with co-author James Patterson. So when you think of this novel, when you think of trying to stop the Nazis from acquiring the materials necessary to getting the atomic bomb, how close did they come? And does it set you in mind of perhaps other situations? Does North Korea come to mind?
I can't on the latter part of it. Another interviewer said, "Well, isn't this timely because of neo-Nazis?" And I'm really writing about a situation where America was at war, some 75, not America, but the Allies were at war some 75 years ago. I really didn't write it with a sort of a topical theme in mind, a relevancy in mind, although fighting any totalitarian regime when you find people that act in patriotism and subjugate themselves for a higher cause, whether it's for against people like North Korea or neo-Nazis marching in Virginia or Nazis overrunning your country, it is kind of inspiring. To the first part of your question, the Nazis would have been a whole lot closer to putting the bomb together had it been for this one man, Kurt Hakkelud, and my character Nordstrom. Literally, one man stood in the way of it and made the difference. The truth is that the Nazis had control originally of most of the great physicists' minds of the 1930s. Unfortunately, they booted a lot of them out, the Jews, to the United States, which gave a boost to our Manhattan Project. And frankly, if they hadn't done that, they probably would have been ahead of us.
That's interesting. And I've heard a lot about Operation Paperclip after the war, which allowed us to get many of their top people,
right,
and led to the development not only of various missile projects that we had, but really to the creation of NASA.
Right, right. And, they still had Heisenberg was their number one physicist. And he had a famous meeting, a clandestine meeting with Niels Bohr, who was sort of the preeminent physicist in the world then. And what he said to Bohr, which was that they felt that they could come up with this decisive weapon within a year, concerned him to such a degree that he got word through the underground to British intelligence, and that was why they sort of mounted these raids, because of the sense that the Nazis were ahead of the Allies in their own work on the bomb.
We're speaking with Andrew Gross. He is the author of The Saboteur. What do you think it is about history and looking back on it, whether in a fictional or non-fictional sense, that fascinates us so much? Is it the fact that really if this had gone one way or another, the world would be shaped entirely differently?
Yes. I mean, I think you've just sort of hit on a lot of it, is that, you know, what I try to do is choose these moments where individuals frame the outcome, and a lot of people, sort of humble, insignificant individuals who have to rise to characters of extreme heroism, that made the difference between the outcome going one way or another. I guess famously, there's a line by Hawthorne, not exactly a famous thriller writer, but unless you think that the Scarlet A maybe stood for action as opposed to adultery, but a phrase that he said, which I've always sort of liked, is that heroes need a heroic world in which to be heroic themselves. And I think in that sense, history defines, these moments in history give us the platform for people to rise and act heroically. And that's what interests me as a novelist.
Well, you see, now you got my mind churning. I can foresee the next book, co-authored by Andrew Gross, by Nathaniel Hawthorne, A is for
right.
Action.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of thriller writers, by the way, if anyone paid attention, who have their best years after they're dead. A lot of them are struggling. So maybe it's time for Hawthorne to start writing commercial suspense novels.
There you go. There you go. You're the man who can help him do it. Andrew Gross, the author of The Saboteur, a fascinating thriller. Check it out, please. And thanks for being on Now It's the News.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
All the best.
Bye.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
Mike Hewitt here. When I was very young, products from the United States were the best in all of the world, while similar items from places like Japan, China, Turkey, and India were considered junk. Who wanted them when Americans built so much better? Think about it. Folks, we built the best automobiles, electronics, industrial tools, household goods, textiles, and more. We had an unexcelled K-12 educational platform with the results to prove it. We competed and won in the space race. Yup, a man on the moon. We had world-class affordable health care and an affordable higher education, second to none. Folks, we absolutely must get beyond dismissing the obvious and figure out what the heck happened and fix it quickly. You can call this one common sense with a full measure of urgency. For more common sense, visit themikehewittshow.com.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Babies,
That's what we're talking about today. Specifically, how do they get out of the mom? I'm sure that's been explained to you before, but there's an interesting and complicated and developing history around that. And today we're going to talk to it, Dr. Randy Hutter Ebstein about that. She is the author of Get Me Out, A History of Childbirth from the Garden of Eden to the Sperm Bank. Dr. Ebstein, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
So my wife and I have had two daughters, two vastly different childbirthing experiences. The first was in a hospital, ended up with an epidural. They took her. She was fine. And they put her in the intensive care to watch her for a little bit, although she ended up being fine. The second our second daughter, we had a home birth. It ended up being less expensive. Ended up being far less complicated, and so we had two very different experiences, tended towards the latter as opposed to the former. But I know most folks go for a traditional hospital birth. In the last 17 years or so, what has developed? I know we're talking about a whole vast history here, but just recently, how have things changed? How have things developed and improved?
Well, you know, it's interesting, just to flip back in time a bit, you know, it's in the early 1900s, everyone, as we know, was giving birth at home.
Right.
But when we moved to start doing hospital births in 1905, 1920, those are really for the poor women that couldn't afford to give birth at home.
Hmm.
For the fancy ladies, you stayed at home in the privacy of your own bedroom, and the hospital births were a lot for, like, the immigrant and poor women who were put in wards, a lot of women in the same room, and a lot of times with inexperienced doctors who were practicing their technique so that they were better at when they did the home births for the fancier ladies. Today we know by like the 1960s, practically everyone was giving birth in a hospital.
Right.
And now we're seeing that, yeah, a lot of people are going your way. First child in the hospital and maybe trying the home birth. It's not, I'd say overwhelmingly more women are still giving birth in a hospital. But what we have today in some communities, not all, in some communities, women who prefer to stay at home are close enough to a hospital and are working with a midwife who's affiliated with a doctor or a hospital. So should you need should you have to be rushed to a hospital,
right,
or do you need any special equipment or surgery, you're close by. So I think that's probably the most recent positive sign of sort of working together with midwives and doctors that some communities, not all, have, that you can have the home birth and yet have the benefit of the hospital should you need to get somewhere quickly.
Well, that's great. That's good to hear. We're speaking with Dr. Randy Hutter Ebstein. She's the author of Get Me Out. I'm curious, the number that I've heard is that about 85% of births don't typically require any sort of medical intervention. Is that correct?
You know, I've heard the numbers are about that. It's really, you know, the thing with childbirth is, for the most part, yeah, things do go well. You know, it's interesting. One of the things that really lured me to this subject isn't so much, oh, making babies, though it is fascinating, the whole sperm meets egg thing, but also how so much about how we give birth and how we want babies to be delivered has to do with doctor-patient relationships. So when your mother was giving birth, it was in an era, and I'm just sort of guessing how old you are and your mom, but it was in an era where you listened to your doctor, and they knew best, and most doctors were men, and most doctors were saying, I don't want to, like, visit from home to home. Get in the hospital. I'm going to knock you out. I don't want to hear you chit-chattering along the way, and I'll get the baby out. And for the most part, women were like, okay, fine. And one of the reasons why natural childbirth started, and it really took off in the 1970s, whether you're home or in the hospital, is women were like, wait. We want to know what's going on. We want to know what you're doing to us, and we want to have a say in this. So a lot of it has to do with doctor-patient relationships, and in addition to advances in science and what our culture is at the time.
And to what extent does that control still take place today? Because, again, these are just numbers that I've heard, and I don't have any particular studies associated with them on the tip of my tongue, that scheduling births and planning them takes place to a much greater degree, so that babies typically are delivered during the daytime. They tend to be planned out, you know, is scheduled, and that has been a trend. I know I was born at 11:30 at night, and that was back in 1976. But I'm wondering to what extent are hospital births these days scheduled at the convenience of the hospital, the physician, and the staff available?
You know, it's funny. I talk to a lot of physicians, and I talk to so many women who are giving birth in the last few years, in the last 50 years, and I went into this thinking there's so many planned births because that's what doctors want. You know, they want to play golf on Wednesday, deliver your baby Thursday at noon, go to their cocktail party. But, you know, it wasn't just the doctors. There's a lot of women out there that are saying, oh, I don't want to not know when this baby's coming. It shocked me, because I'm kind of a more let this baby come out when the baby feels cooked and ready to come out of the oven. But there were a lot of women that said, oh, well, it can't be, you know, I want to give birth on this Monday versus that Tuesday. I love the date of this birthday sounding. So a lot of the planning, and yes, I don't know the statistics because it's hard to really keep, I don't even know if there's statistics where they go and ask women to say, you know, is this scheduled or not? And is it scheduled for a health reason or for your own convenience? That would be the real issue to try to tease out. But there is a lot more planning, women planning to be induced and women planning a C-section on a certain day. And I think for me, what that meant to me is it's a reflection, again, on our society, that we're kind of control freaks and want to be able to plan our week and know that, okay, well, this way I can go on vacation this week, we'll have the baby before. I don't know. Right. I think it says more about us than our babies.
Interesting. I wonder if the advent of the smart phone has led to the advent of the smart birth in a way. We're speaking with Dr.
I think,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it leads to the advent of a social media birth, the smartphone.
Interesting.
There's people, you know, Snapchatting and texting as their babies are coming out.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I never thought about that. My wife and I got in just under the wire before any of that was available. And, you know, it should have struck me. Yeah, there are all these pictures of people in the hospital, but they're probably documenting a lot more than just the after scenes, and that's quite an interesting advent, and not one that I'm positive necessarily furthers helpful development, but it's definitely a thing. We're speaking to Dr. Randy Hutter Epstein, the author of Get Me Out, A History of Childbirth from the Garden of Eden to the Sperm Bank. Do you think we're at a place where this ultimately ends up, at least as we do it in this country, with healthier kids?
I think in the most part, we're better at preventing illness in terms of antibiotics that came around in the mid-20th century. I think we're getting much better at doing some prenatal diagnosis. I don't mean designer babies. I don't mean having like a baby that's guaranteed to have a high SAT score. But I do mean that we can, if there is a fatal genetic illness that runs in your family, we can now, for some of these diseases, look at the genetics in an embryo before it's implanted and prevent that vicious cycle of an illness. So for those cases, it gets sort of conflated with designer babies, but there is some wonderful scientific advances in trying in making healthier babies. And I think we're learning and learning. And yes, it does talk to the issues of how much are we planning for. Is it just disease prevention or is it perfecting?
Sounds like good news. Dr. Randy Hutter Epstein, she's the author of Get Me Out, A History of Childbirth from the Garden of Eden to the Sperm Bank. Dr. Epstein, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks. All the best. Bye-bye.
Happy trails.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair and Godric Rocklin. For more information, go to Twitter, at Now It's the News. And until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
This report is brought to you by the American Egg Board and the Egg Nutrition Center. February is American Heart Month, a perfect time to examine your dietary choices and determine if you are making the right decisions for your heart. You may not think of eggs as part of a heart-healthy diet, but this nutrient powerhouse is a perfect pair to whole grains, vegetables, and other heart-healthy foods. Decades of research have demonstrated that healthy adults can enjoy eggs without impacting their risk of heart disease. In fact, a recent study suggests eating one egg a day may reduce risk of stroke by 12%. Dr. Tia M. Raines, Executive Director at the Egg Nutrition Center.
Everyone loves the taste and convenience of eggs, and they should feel good about eating them, too. One large egg has varying amounts of 13 essential vitamins and minerals and high-quality protein, all for 70 calories. And don't toss the yolk. It contains most of the egg's nutrients, including choline, which has been linked to brain health.
For more information on eggs and an overall heart-healthy diet, visit eggnutritioncenter.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
President Donald Trump welcomed Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull to the White House today. After some brief remarks by the President and Prime Minister, the Prime Minister was asked a question regarding Australia's strict gun rules.
We certainly don't presume to provide policy or political advice on that matter here. This is you have an amendment to your constitution which deals with gun ownership. You have a very, very different history, and I will focus on our own political arguments and debates, and wish you wise deliberation in your own.
A person close to the teenager accused of killing 17 people at a Florida high school warned the FBI she was concerned that he would go into a school and just shoot the place up. That's according to a transcript of a call that an FBI tip operator received last month. This is USA Radio News.
GEICO presents eyewitness interviews with inanimate objects.
This is Brian Bruno live on the scene of a recently flooded basement, here to describe the event, a tube sock.
So I'm curled up in a cozy pile of whites when the washing machine suddenly starts shimmying and shaking. Next thing I know, we're standing in 4 inches of water.
Did you help clean up?
Sure, but I'm just one sock.
A tube sock can't help you with a flooded basement, but the GEICO Insurance Agency can help you get covered for personal property damage. Call GEICO to see how affordable homeowners insurance can be.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root. I'm a father of four, and I worry every day about this dangerous world. There are so many things that could go wrong. Economic collapse, stock market crash, terrorist attack, war with North Korea. There's a lot to worry about when it comes to protecting your income, assets, and your family's future. Thankfully, my good friends at Tangible Investments are your safe haven from the storm. Call now, and Tangible Investments will send you absolutely free a 1 ounce American Silver Eagle, along with your guide for investing in precious metals. To receive your free American Silver Eagle, call toll-free 800-780-9000. That's 800-780-9000.
House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi tripled down on calling the GOP's recently enacted tax cuts crumbs after multiple Democrats so warned her not to, saying that it could make her not look so hot among her Democratic voters. Congressman Steve Scalise joined Fox Business to talk about his thoughts regarding Nancy Pelosi.
I want her to continue speaking. I think the more that she talks, the more it shows just how out of touch radical liberals in Washington are with hardworking families.
Florida's Governor Rick Scott reveals his plan to keep schools safe from shooters. USA Radio Network's John DeMaster has more.
The governor's office putting out a statement that says the plan will include improvements to school safety, along with plans to keep guns away from people that are dealing with mental health issues. It was last Wednesday when a gunman walked into a school in Parkland, Florida, opened fire, taking the lives of 17 people. For USA Radio News, I'm John DeMaster.
Find us anytime at usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News.
Howdy, folks. Colonel Sanders here to tell you about KFC's $10 chicken shares. They're perfect to share with those special people in your life. Choose from 6 pieces of my Kentucky Fried Chicken, 9 extra crispy tenders, 12 hot wings, or a bunch of popcorn nuggets. So grab your buddy, your cousin, your dad, your college roommate, or my friend Joan, and head to KFC. Are you there yet? Okay, good. Now get to sharing and eating. KFC's $10 chicken shares. It's finger-licking good.
And participating KFC's only. Hot wings not available at all locations. Prices may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
The Justice Department has